Hello everyone, I am Ashish Bhatia. I'm a senior program manager with the Data Group. Thanks for attending the webinar today and taking time out for the session. Today we're going to talk about campaign optimization using Microsoft R. And we have two people from the development team of Microsoft R itself. We have Sherry Gilley, who's a senior software engineer in the team, and we have Yusuf Song, who's a data scientist, and they're going to talk about campaign optimization today. Before I hand it over to them, let me quickly go over the format of the webinar. We'll have 35 minutes of talk time, and rest of the hour we will allocate for Q&A. You can put in your questions in the Q&A window at any point of time during the webinar. We'll try to answer as much as possible using the chat, then we can address them at the end of towards the end of the session as well. We will share the presentation as a follow-up mail of this webinar, so don't worry about that part. We will send the deck back to you guys as a follow-up mail at the within probably a day. Without further ado, I would hand it over to Sherry. Sherry, take it off.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sherry Gilley, and sorry about that. My screen froze for a second. My name is Sherry Gilley, and I am a senior software engineer, and I'm working with Microsoft R Solutions. And later in the hour, I will be introducing you to Yusuf, who's a data scientist, who will be talking in more detail about some of the code. So let's get started. The next person that I would like to introduce you to is not even a real person, but it's somebody that we talk about in our stories here, and he's Bernie, the business analyst. For the purpose of this presentation, Bernie is working for an insurance company, and he has some insurance products that he would like to send out in his new marketing campaign. The thing that I want you to know about this, though, is it really doesn't matter who Bernie works for or what kind of products that Bernie's actually selling. The important thing is that he has some data from previous campaigns that he can use to build a model. So as we start talking more about what Bernie's trying to do, you'll notice that very little of it has to do with the actual products that Bernie is selling. That makes it much easier for you to think of using this same kind of technique for your own business, whether you're in an insurance industry or some other completely different industry selling a completely different product. So Bernie does have some historical data for some past campaigns that his company has run. And what Bernie's interested in doing right now is in his new campaign, he would like to come up with a better way of contacting people so that he can increase his conversion rates. So if you look at, he looks at his historical data, and he can see that in the past, the channels they've used have been cold calling, email, and SMS. And actually, he can see that of those three, email does slightly better than cold calling, and SMS is not quite as good as those two. He could also look at things like by the day of week, and one of the things, the striking things that he'll notice is that the conversion rates are better in the middle of the week, and yet in the past campaigns, they've had more contacts during the Monday and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So clearly we can do better here. Also, if you look at the time of day, you've noticed that there's a dip in the afternoon. The conversion rates are not as good in the afternoon as they are in the morning and the evening. So taking this information, Bernie could come up with some suggestions having nothing whatsoever to do with modeling by saying, let's do more in the middle of the day, or let's do more in the middle of the week, let's do more in the morning and the evening, and maybe we'll start doing more emailing. He would like something much better than that. So what Bernie's going to do is he's going to talk to Deborah, the data scientist, about his problem, and Deborah's going to come up with a model that will predict conversion rates and allow Bernie to then optimize the best time and the best way to contact each individual lead in a personalized fashion. And that's the solution that we're talking about today. So Deborah has available to her some data about the products, some data about the campaigns, some demographic data for the leads, that they've used in the past and that they will be using, and some historic data from previous campaigns. And these are the four data sets that will be used for this solution. So remember, we talked about wanting to optimize the contact. There are three different channels: calling, SMS, and email. There are 7 days, and there are three times of the day. So there is actually a total of 63 combinations that could be used to contact any individual person. Once Deborah has decided on a model that can predict conversion rates, she can take these 63 combinations for each person and come up with the best conversion rate for that person. And that will become the recommendation for the way to contact that person. So once she's done this, we have a Power BI that shows the results of that. So here is, at the very top here, the actual campaign, the actual recommendations for the new campaign. So this first person here will be contacted on a Tuesday morning, and they'll be cold called, given a cold call. This third person is going to be contacted on a Saturday morning with email. So all of the actual contact information for the new campaign is recorded in this top table. Below that, we show some information about what the summary of that would be like. And one of the things that might strike you is that we're doing a lot more texting than we might have expected from just looking at the historical data. And if you look down below that, you can actually see that the texting is being used mostly for young people, whereas middle age and senior, very few texting. But it turns out in this next campaign, there's a lot of young people who will be contacted by SMS. So even though you might have guessed some of the patterns from just looking at the historical data, now we have a model that gives you very personalized information for each individual contact. So how did we do that? Well, it turns out we've actually created the solution twice now. It's the same solution, the same steps, which Yuzhou will be talking about in a little bit more detail, for how to develop the model and do the scoring and get the recommendations, but we're doing it in two different environments. And while the steps of making the solution work are the same, the access to the data and how we interact with the data will be different between the two environments. So we've done this on SQL Server 2016. We've also done it on Azure HD Insight Spark clusters. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that in a moment, and you'll hear a little about what's different about the two and some interesting information about the Spark clusters from Yuzhou. So the point here is that we want to work wherever your data is. So why would we do it on SQL Server? Well, if your data is on SQL Server, then we certainly want to leverage the in-database analytics inside SQL Server as well. You won't have to move your data. You won't have to worry about security issues with moving data from one place to another. We're performing the analytics where your data resides. And with a SQL Server 2016, we have R services which allow you to embed the R script directly inside SQL. And there's parallel processing and no memory limitations, plus it's highly scalable. So why Spark clusters? Well, if your data is not in SQL Server, and particularly if your data is very large, a Spark cluster could be the way to go. We have large portable R parallel analytics. We have terabyte scale machine learning, deliveries very fast, and Yuzhou will be talking a little about how he would adapt code to take advantage of some of this parallel processing in a moment. So where can you find these solutions? Well, we've also made it very easy for you to click a few buttons, fill out a small form, and have access to an environment already set up for you. All of the data is there, all of the code's there, and you can actually execute the code yourself, either for SQL on a VM that includes all of the data in SQL, or for HD Insight, you'll be able to deploy a cluster and see all of the data and actually execute it there. To do this, you'll use your Azure log in, and I'm going to actually walk through doing one of these two. We'll walk through doing the campaign optimization. So the first thing that you will do is go to the gallery, and you will click on the campaign optimization. You'll get some information about the solution. You can use the Try It Now button and see the spreadsheet of the Power BI, but for now, let's deploy it. We click the Deploy button. Again, we'll have to fill out a small form. We'll give it a deployment name. We'll pick a location. Since I'm in Chicago, I'm going to pick the Central U.S., and you hit the Create button. Now, on the next page, you'll be asked for a username and password. This is the username and password you'll use to log into your cluster once it's created for you. You hit Next, and we will start to provision the HD Insight Spark cluster for you. Again, it'll be filled out with everything that you'll need to actually look at the code and execute it. Now, through the magic of video here, we've actually spent 25 minutes to deploy the solution. At the end of that 25 minutes, you'll get a page that looks like this. We can click on the link to go right to the RStudio on the cluster. You'll have to log in the first time. In fact, you have to log in twice. The first time, we'll be logging into the cluster. The second time, into RStudio. Both times, you'll use the same username and password that you set up. After you've done this once, your browser can remember this information, so you won't have to do it again. You can just click on the link and get right there. So now we are looking at RStudio on our cluster. We're going to go back to the instructions page and copy a little bit of code and come back to RStudio and just paste it right into the terminal window. And this code will actually copy over all of the data and the files that you'll need to finish running the solution. So now that it's all set up, you could click on, for example, campaign main there and start looking at the code and executing it yourself. The one last thing that we're going to do is go back over to the instructions page again and scroll down, and there is a link there that will take you to a website that will allow you to that will walk through all of the steps and what they're doing, and so you can use this website along with RStudio to further explore the code itself. With that, I'm going to turn this over to you, Jo, who will talk a little bit more about developing the code, what went into that, and actually show you some of the sample code as well, and also give you some hints that he's found for making HD Insight Spark clusters perform better. You, Jo?
Yep. Okay. Hello, everyone. So thanks, Sherry, for the introduction. And I'm Yu Zhou from Azure Data Scientist team. And now I will take over and give you guys some details of the implementation on Spark cluster. So why on Spark? So as Sherry just mentioned before, it's scalable to big data and faster comparing to Hadoop because of all computation is taken in memory. So first, let's take an overview of the workflows. So here we actually provide three stages: the development stage, the batch scoring stage, and the web service deployment stage. So in the development stage, we do like data processing, feature engineering, and model training in this stage. The trained model object and other objects like stats info will be saved for other stages to use. In the batch scoring stage, you can do batch scoring on the cluster. And in the web service deployment stage, you can deploy a scoring function along with the saved model objects so that clients can score their data by calling the web service either locally or remotely. So finally, the output will be a CSV file, and a Hive table will be created based on this Hive table, based on this CSV file. And later, we can hook the Power BI on the Hive table for visualization. Okay, here are some major steps in the development stage. So you can see we have data generation, data processing, feature engineering, training and evaluation, recommendation, and Hive table creation. So I will give some more details of some of them in the later samples code session. Now let's take a look at the development stage. So in the very beginning, we upload the four tables into HDFS. As Sherry just showed you before, the campaign detail table actually contains campaign details such as campaign name, category, time, and products. The product table contains information about products. The demographic table contains demographic information for each lead ID. And the market touchdown table contains historical campaign information. For example, the content channels, content date and time, and the conversion rate. So after uploading these four tables, we merge them into one table and fill the missing value using global mode for numerical columns. For categorical columns, well, we just leave the missing as a new level. And then next, we do the feature engineering. So basically, we calculate the frequency of different contact methods for each lead ID. For example, for lead ID 1, we want to know how many times it is contacted by the text message, by email, and by call, respectively. So next, we split the data. Actually, we randomly select about 70% of the records into training data set and the rest into the testing data set. So then we train two models. We train random forest model and the gradient boosted tree model based on using the training data set and evaluate the performance using the testing data set. So what I have showed so far is a generic workflows, which is exactly the same as our SQL implementation. So next, I'm going to dive deeper into the Spark implementation. So if you provision a Spark cluster with R server on Azure portal, the default configuration you will get is the following. So you will for the Spark cluster, you will get one edge node. The edge node is the interface between the Hadoop cluster and the outside network. Normally, edge nodes are used to run clients, applications, and the cluster administration tools. The edge node will have node size D4V2 and 8 cores. Also, it has about 27 gigabytes RAM. You will get two head nodes. Head node actually control where data is and where compute happens respectively. You will get three zookeepers. Generally, the zookeeper watch over worker nodes and coordinate them. Also, you will get two worker nodes. Worker nodes do the computation. Each worker node will have node size D4V2, 8 cores, and 27 gigabyte RAM. For the software version, you will get the Spark 2.0 and MRS 9.0.1. And in our next releasing, I think you will get Spark 0.1 and MRS 9.1. Okay, in the very beginning, the straightforward implementation actually is very slow. So here is the major time consumers in each step. So in the table merging part, the RX merge is slow and can't be supported under Spark Compute Context for the current version. So the good news is it will be available under Spark in the next release of MRS. And in the feature engineering part, we calculate the count of each type of channel per lead ID use deploy R package, which is very slow when the data is big. And in the training and evaluation part, the GPT training is relatively slow using RxB trees. And in the recommendation part, as Sherry mentioned before, we need to scoring 63 times as original time data set. For example, if you have 1 million records in the original data set, you need to score 63 million records. This is because there are 63 different combinations of day, time, and channel for each lead ID. So besides that, we also use Rx Merge and the DeployR package here, which are very slow. So from the table, you can see for a 10 million record data, the feature engineering and the recommendation takes super long time. So how can we speed this up? So here is our solution. We first hash the lead ID into hash code, and we split the data into small pieces of chunk based on the hash code using Rx split function. And so each chunk is lead ID exclusive and doesn't have row dependency. And next, we apply transformation functions to each chunk in parallel by using Rx exec function. So you can take a look at the picture. So here we have four different lead IDs, A, B, C, and D. So we hash the lead ID into hash code 1 and hash code 2. So here A and B hashed into 1 and C and D hashed into 2. So next we split the data based on the hash code. So hash code 1 will be splitted into chunk 1, hash code 2 will be splitted into chunk 2. And later on, we can apply the transformation function to each of the chunk using Rx exec function. So each of the worker nodes will take the task and do the computation in parallel. So here is a simple example demonstrating how can we do parallel execution with Rx exec function. The real example I will show you later is much more complicated, but very similar to in general. So here we have table A and B. B has already been split into 10 chunks. All A and B are in the XDF format, which is the most efficient format for MRS on Spark. The function merge table will merge A with one chunk of B. And then we wrap merge table function into Rx exec function and use Rx element R to control the number of chunks. Here is a performance comparison. So let's focus on the 10 million data. So here we split the data into 100 chunks. We can see feature engineering part and the recommendation part have been improved significantly. Okay, next I'm going to show you some sample code. Now I'm going to share my screen.
Yuzhou, I see your screen now.
Okay, great. Thanks, Sherry. Okay. So first, let me show you how to run through all the major scripts. So in the file, I think let's first take a look at the campaign main. So the campaign main is for development stage. Inside of the main function, here, you can see we call each major step function. Like here, first step we call data processing, we call feature engineering, we call training and evaluation, recommendation, and create hive table. So after running this development stage scripts, you need to run another script called copy dev to product. So this script actually will copy the trained model objects and other objects for development stage folder to production folder. If this is the very first time you run the solution, you must run this script because there is no model objects in the production folder. Later on, if you run it again, you can skip it unless you want to override the current model in the production folder. So next, after copying the model objects, you can do the batch scoring. So the campaign scoring scripts actually is for the batch scoring. So inside of the campaign score function, you can see it's very similar to the campaign main function. The only difference here is we don't have the training and the evaluation parts inside of this function. And also, as we mentioned, you can do the web service deployment. The campaign deployment scripts is for the web service deployment. And after deploy the web service, you can use the script called web scoring. Let me see. The campaign web scoring script to verify the published web service. Okay, so next I'm going to show you some details of some of the code. So I think in the very beginning, I will the very important thing is you should know how to set the compute context. So basically, it's very very simple. You can use the Rx Spark Connect function to connect to the Spark session. And later on, if you want to switch the compute context back to local, you can simply use Rx set compute context to local. And if we want to connect to Spark again, you can invoke this function again to connect to Spark. Okay, so next, let's see how can we do the table merge use RxFTIC function. So in step one, we can see first, we will automatically decide how many chunks we should use. And after that, we define the function called partition by lead ID. So this function will hash the lead ID into hash code and split the data based on the hash code. So after partition the data, we define the function called merge tables. So here you don't have to care too much about what's inside of this function, but basically this function merge tables chunk by chunk. So after defining the function merge tables, we can invoke the RxActive function by putting the merge table into it, use Rx element arc to control the number of chunks, and put all other arguments. So one thing you need to mention is that here we set the compute context as local part because for each of the merge, it takes less than about 2 minutes. So the data is actually kind of small. If you want, if your data is really big, you can set it to Spark. So next, I'm going to show you another example using RxActive function in the feature engineering part. So in the feature engineering part, also we define the feature engineering function. And then we connect to the Spark Spark compute context, and we invoke the RxActive function, put the feature engineering function into it, use the Rx element arc to control the number of the chunk, and put all other arguments into it. Next, let's take a look at the training. So here I would like to share some tips of the training. So as I mentioned before, we train a random forest model, use the RxDeForest function. So in order to speed up the training, so one trick is the total number of tree equals to n tree multiplied by times 2 run. So for example, here we want to train 40 tree random forest, and we can set the n tree equals to 2 and times 2 run equals to 20. So this will speed up the training. Another thing is, here we set the schedule once equals to 2. So if your data is relatively small, you set the schedule once equal to 2 can speed up the computation. For my case, the 10 million records data has about 3 gigabytes data size. So in this case, we set the schedule once equals to false. And for the for the 1 million data, the data size is about 500 megabytes, and we set the schedule once equals to 2. So you can take this example as a reference. Also, we can set the compute OOB error to a negative number, so we can avoid computing the out-of-bag errors. However, for the gradient boosted tree model using RxBTrees function, the tricks for RF model no longer works. So for here, we still want to train a GBT model with 40 trees. We cannot set the n tree equals to 2 and the number of times 2 run equals to 20. This is because the GBT model is a sequential model, so it cannot be simply assembled by mini batches of trees. So after training, you will get some plots. The ROC curve will be plotted in a window here. Okay, now I'm going to switch back. Okay, Sherry, can you see the slides now?
Yes.
Okay, great. So, at last, I'm going to, this is a brief illustration about how can we deploy the web service. So basically, first we need to load the MRS deploy package, and then we should remote log in to the edge node of the cluster, and then we load files. So the files generally is for the model objects and other stats information. And you load the files and put them into a list. Next, you define the scoring function. And next, you publish the scoring function along with the loaded files. And at last, you can verify the web service. Okay, so I think that's pretty much for me today. So let's go to the Q&A session.
Sherry, thanks, and Yusa, thanks for a good overview. Let me pick up some questions from the Q&A window. The first question is asking, I recognize that R server can use Spark cluster. I was trying to understand decision criteria for operationalization of R server, web node, compute node versus Spark cluster.
So, Yusha, do you want to talk a little about when you'd use one versus the other?
The compute context?
No, when you'd use a Spark cluster versus the. Well, I think the question is actually when do we want, is it that we want to use SQL versus the Spark cluster, or is it in the Spark cluster when we would want to I think there's two different questions. I'm not sure which one they're asking. If the data is not in, I actually think there's two different questions here. One of them is if the data is not
So Sherry, there are multiple questions from Raj. I'm asking the first one, which is about I'm trying to understand the decision criteria for operationalization of R server versus Spark cluster. And then there's a second question about for data not in SQL, when would you use Spark versus multi-node R server?
So the I'm not sure the question is a versus. The operationalization of the R server is allowing you to call the scoring function from a web API. So if your data is in somewhere else and you want to then just score it through the Spark cluster, that's when you'd use the operationalization code. Versus if it's just in Spark cluster, it's on the Hive cluster and the answer is there and that's all you need, then you wouldn't need the operationalization piece of that.
All right, thank you. So another question, which is about what is the importance of campaign optimization?
Well, campaign optimization is just sort of a terminology we've used for being able to optimize the certain aspects of your campaign. So in the marketing campaign, it's all about trying to get a better conversion rate. And what we've done here is we've picked a model that will help to predict conversion rate. And then the optimization piece of that is that we're trying to optimize certain parts of how we contact people. In this case, the one that we just used, we picked when, what time of day, what day of the week, and which channel to use to contact people. So that's what we're optimizing here, and we're optimizing it by using that model multiple times to find the best combination to actually contact that person. And what we're doing there is we're trying to increase the conversion rate by getting this person at the best time of day for them to actually take a look and hopefully respond to our campaign. So that's what we're talking about when we say that we're optimizing it. And what we talk about is that we use a model to create recommendations. Those recommendations are the optimal time to contact that person, time and channel to contact that person.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. Jyoti is asking, can you use Python as opposed to R?
Use Spark? Use R on the Spark?
No, use Python as opposed to R to do campaign optimization using Spark, maybe?
Could you please repeat that question?
The question simply is, can you use Python as opposed to R?
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing as a language of choice.
That's something we're looking into. The current solutions are using R.
I think right now it's the answer is yes. Yeah, the Python is also available on both in the SQL Server and on the Spark side, but we haven't done any templates solution on that on Python side. But Python is available.
So Virendra is asking, can you use Azure ML instead of MRS deploy to operationalize the model as a web service? If yes, when to choose what?
I think the model has already been trained, I think probably we can use Azure ML to operationalize the model. But I think for Spark cluster, the value to deploy the cluster is if you have a really big data to score, we can take advantage of the Spark cluster to do the scoring across different worker nodes. So do I answer the question?
Thanks,
Yeah.
Then James is asking, the PBI dashboard read data from Hive tables directly. Is that correct? And then how is the PBI dashboard updated in production mode? Is it real time or in batch?
Well, this is actually a batch problem. When you go to do a new campaign, you're going to you're going to want to have all of the leads already there, so it's not really a real-time problem. So it is done in batch, and PBA, the Power BI dashboard does read the data from Hive directly. So you could do it in little bits and pieces, but in general, the campaign itself is inherently a batch problem. We're going to do a new campaign, and so here's our leads, and now we want to know how to contact them.
A couple of more questions from Raj. He's asking, is the web service endpoint on the edge node? And then also, what is the criteria for sizing these machines?
Criteria?
For sizing.
Mm-hmm.
He's asking, how would you decide how to size the cluster?
I'm guessing that's the question. How would you decide which machines to pick, right? That's the second question.
Oh.
The first question was about, is the web service on the edge node?
Yeah, actually, the edge node hosts the web service. That's true. Yeah, for the second question, how to pick the size of the machine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the question.
So the size of the machine refers to like number of worker nodes or the RAM of the, how big is the RAM or?
Probably both, I would guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
how big and how many?
I think first deployed solution, you can try. Actually here we only limited the size of the machine. So because the Spark cluster is very expensive, so if you want to try a big, for example, a really big data case, probably you can try a bigger machine with a bigger more nodes, worker nodes, and probably a bigger memory size. So I think that's how you can decide it, but I would recommend you to start it with a very small size of the machine. If the performance of the speed doesn't satisfy your requirements, you can increase the size of the machine. Yeah, it's the cost with the speed.
Thanks. There's another question by Fritz. How are we supposed to know how to set up input parameters to these models? I see the presenter put a lot of domain knowledge into these R functions.
What kind of domain knowledge? So what kind
around
of
around campaign optimization?
Yeah, so is the training function or the...
Yeah, there's not a lot of domain knowledge in terms of the types of products that are being used. They're really just sort of, they're in plugged into the model and they've got past data for them. In terms of training, I think that the stuff that Yusho was talking about is stuff that is information that you can take advantage of because he's just shown it to you and you've got the sample code that can use it. In terms of speeding things up and some of the tricks that he used for speeding things up, and that's code that we now have that you could take advantage of.
All right, thanks, Sherry. Fritz is also asking, can you explain again what the Zookeeper nodes do? Is this load balancing?
Okay, so basically I think the Zookeeper will coordinate the work of different worker nodes. So generally watch over the worker nodes and coordinate them. And so I think the worker nodes probably is very more important to us because for data scientists, because the worker nodes do the computation. And the Zookeeper coordinate the work of between them. But for me, I don't care too much on the Zookeeper.
Okay.
And
thank you. All right. Let me pick up another question. This is coming again from Virendra. I guess the percentage age of positive campaign is very less when compared to the negative. Is there need for using techniques like SMART to boost up the minority class?
Oh, that's a valid question. So we haven't tried that here because the goal of our solution is to show our audience how can you implement the solution from end to end. Definitely, other techniques will improve the performance can be added to the solution.
Great. Another question from Raj is, it also depends on what are we doing in each layer. What does worker node do versus edge node? It was not clear on what are we doing where.
Well, okay, so basically edge node is just an interface between the cluster and outside network. So if you want to send your computation command or request, you should log into the edge node and send the request. And also you can run like clients, application, or cluster administrations tools on the edge node. So once you send the computation request, I think the worker nodes, we will take the text and do the computation. So edge node basically is just an interface.
Also, the RStudio is on the edge node, so I think that you,
right,
Joe mentioned this before, that when you set the compute context to local, you're working on the edge node, and when you set the compute context to the Spark, then you're working on the worker nodes.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. That's all on the questions for now. I don't have more questions. Any final thoughts, Sherry or Yusuf?
So Sherry, probably you want to show the last two slides?
Oh, yes. I certainly do. So you'll be getting these slides in your email, and I just want to point out that there's some resources available. You can go to the solutions link here to see the Cortana Intelligence Gallery, and there's quick links to our particular solution. The SQL link is here, the HD Insight link is there, and the website, which discusses both of these solutions and which is linked to from each of the solutions, is here as well. So these links can help you to recreate this experience on your own. And finally, if you have any further feedback, we would love to hear from you. You can send it to mlsolutions@microsoft.com. With that, we'd like to thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Sherry. Thanks, Hugo. Thank you, everybody, for joining the webinar today. It was great sharing this learning with you guys. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another session. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye.